To be an average parent, you can't always prevent emergencies, but you can be better prepared. So talk to your healthcare provider or call 1-888-ASK-HRSA. This message is a public service of WUSB and Emergency Medical Services for Children.
Did you know that back in 1964, before we became a disposable society, 87% of the soda and beer sold in the United States was packaged in reusable, refillable bottles? By 1994, this number had dwindled to only 6%, and studies show that reusing glass containers saves 90% of the energy required to make new ones. Recycling glass is good, but reusing glass bottles is even better. So remember, using it once is not enough. Choose to reuse.
That's right. It's 6 o'clock. You're listening to the mighty WUSB in Stony Brook, located at 90.1 FM and 107.3 FM. It's a Tuesday night, and what that means is it's once again time for Off the Wall. a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hi, everybody. What's going on?
What's going on? Wow. Okay, well, I'm glad you asked that question because it just opens it up to all sorts of discussion because a lot's going on, Kyle.
Well, thankfully, this show is a show where discussion is allowed, and we specialize in this particular area of expertise.
There are shows on WUSB where discussion is not allowed.
That's right.
The pre-recorded ones. We can't.
We're not going to discuss those shows. We can't discuss that.
No, we can't discuss them, and they can't discuss
how they don't discuss things.
Right.
But that's not what we're going to discuss tonight.
Not at all. Not at all. You know,
have you been? You look well.
I'm confused, but yeah, I'm good for the most part.
I'm sure our viewers agree. You look great. I also look great. You can tell by my voice.
That's why we're on the radio.
That is why we're locked in this compartmentalized, secure radio transmission
booth. We're on once a week.
Yeah.
And in this administration, so much happens in a week that you just can't possibly cover it all. So people always write to us and say, why did you cover this? Well, because we only have an hour. It's only once a week. And this administration, like they say, accomplishes more in 3 weeks than other ones do in entire terms. But not in the way I think they want to be remembered. You know, they are doing things like I couldn't even imagine. I thought it would be a disaster. It's a disaster in two halves. It really is.
I don't even know what the word for the opposite of accomplishment. Would it be a decomplishment? They're decomplishing.
You know,
disincomplishing.
I'm sure Donald Trump will come up with a word for that because that's what he's good at. Making up words.
Everybody knows. Stop. I know.
You know, you've been walking around imitating Donald Trump now for like the last few days. And, you know, if you were the only person doing it, it would be annoying. But everybody's doing it.
No, I think Alec Baldwin owes everyone an apology.
Right.
Because it's starting to stick.
Uh-huh.
I think there was a story even that apparently someone used a photo of Alec Baldwin in a serious story about Donald Trump.
I think it was in South America.
Was that where it was? It was, yeah.
And they're talking about Donald Trump and Putin, I believe. And you
correct.
See Putin, but then you see Alec Baldwin instead
it's
of
Alec
Trump.
Alec Baldwin, and it is being a uncanny impression. It is being used as a stock photo.
And you know that Donald Trump found out about that and that, you know, image is everything to him. So having Alec Baldwin actually being the face of Trump to a foreign newspaper must have really rubbed him the wrong way. And you know, when he's quiet, that's when you know he's really steamed. And these last few weeks with Saturday Night Live, SNL, the most politically charged show apparently on television now, he usually would tweet about how it's failing, unfunny, et cetera, et cetera. And it has been so brutal, so on target, so uncompromising in the last couple of weeks, and he hasn't said a word. So you know he's steaming about that.
Indeed. And he's also got a fair amount of fish to fry.
Mm-hmm.
I cut you off about the decomplishing, and boy, is that true. It is a lightning pace, but recall the adage, we're going to be winning so much, we're tired of winning. Well, the ideas that we're supposed to win mm-hmm. have ended up not winning in some cases. And as it happens, we're losing, or they
yeah, when
are
you
losing.
Say,
yeah, I'm, I don't
when
wanna,
you say we, you got to be careful.
It was said as we're going to be winning yeah. so much. So let's say for, pardon me, the sake of argument that we're a country,
mm-hmm.
a unified country. Let's just, hypothetically speaking, agree that we are the pejorative here. We're losing, or he's forcing policies that are losing so much, we're getting sick of losing. In fact, we're collectively taking stock of what actually we're going to be winning on. And I think even Trump voters are asking themselves that very question. They've kind of scraped the bottom for excuses and for, you know, Obama. And then the ideas chewed up and regurgitated, and it somehow comes out to be not Trump's fault. But there's... There's only so much
getting harder to do.
You can only chew ideas so many times. And if it starts out as BS, it's remaining that, you know, it ends up still being BS. And I think they're getting a little bit nervous, a little like,
well,
this guy might not have a handle on things.
You're saying that, we're not winning. And I have to kind of take exception to the we thing. I don't think we're unified. I don't think we can be unified.
Well, I try to qualify that.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it takes a lot of qualification.
It's
and I don't
hard.
Think either of us have the qualifications to even make that happen.
Let's not say that that's true.
But I feel like there has been a lot of victory in the last week. I mean, just think of all the things that have happened, all right? First of all, that whole thing with Mitch McConnell silencing Elizabeth Warren on the Senate floor.
Did not go unremarked.
Oh, my God. Did he not see what he was saying? She persisted. Yet she persisted. I mean, for, you know, an elderly white man to basically silence a woman on the floor of the Senate like that with those demeaning words and not think it would go unremarked, not think it would be a rallying cry, an inspiration to generations of the future. I mean, how dim can you possibly be? Wow. Thank you. Thank you, Mitch. That's the greatest gift you could have given us. And yeah, you know, the vote lost. All the idiots are being confirmed left and right. Not the point. The point is the fight. You have to fight these things, and you can't back down.
And represent the ideas.
Mm-hmm.
You have these ideas. You have to stand by them and apply them when they actually reign true. That when they speak to the issue, when they are proven, they prove themselves out in a situation where they aren't being advocated for or considered, right? We're going to ignore them. Don't ignore. Bring them up. These mm-hmm. things, these situations are great examples of why we believe in what we believe. And that has to be reiterated. People have to be able to point to this stuff and say, look what you're doing here. This is exactly why we represent what we represent. These ideas, they have meaning. They impact people, and they impact all of us mm-hmm. at the end of the day. So you had better take notice and consider the impact, because there really is an impact to this rhetoric and or lack thereof.
Well, it's nonstop, all the foul ups and blunders that we're witnessing. I mean, the thing this really bothers me when they call that Mar-a-Lago place of Trump's the Winter White House. It's not a Winter White House, people. It's his business, okay? You can't have the Winter White House in a business that you own. And you know, he's supposed to basically divest of all these businesses and not be attached to them, but he's still going down there, and he's entertaining people and giving them free things and all that. But, wow, you know, I didn't even think it would get this bad. I didn't think it would be this egregious. But basically, okay, you have a $14,000 annual membership to this place, okay? You want to join – we were asking about this earlier, Kyle. Mar-a-Lago, you want to join that, 14 grand, all right?
Okay, wait. That's not the application fee,
oh,
isn't it? Like,
no, I'm getting to that.
Okay. That. Just want to make sure.
A $200,000 fee, all right? So don't even give me the check for $14,000 unless you have that 200 grand already set aside. You pay that. So, you know, you want to go down there, 214 grand. You got to cough that up. Almost
yeah, the
a quarter, $14,000 almost.
The $14K annual, that's maintenance.
Uh-huh.
That keeps you in the door.
That keeps Donald Trump maintained.
Yes.
But anyway, okay, so basically he took the Japanese prime minister down there basically to show him a good time or whatever, you know? And happens to be the president of the United States doing this, driving everybody crazy with the insanity. But so what happens? North Korea launches a missile. Just for fun, you know, over the Sea of Japan or whatever, and it turns into a bit of a crisis. Well, guess what? They start dealing with the crisis right there in the open, conducting state business at a dinner table, and the members of this damn country club are able to see what they're doing. I mean, I did not see this coming. Now, Trump was having dinner with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe when the news broke, and for some unexplained reason, he decided to handle the situation right there on the patio where guests unabashedly photographed the events. And it's just Wow, the center of the action, said one member, real estate investor Richard D'Agazio. He wrote this on Facebook. Yes, it's on Facebook, alongside a series of photographs he took of the president of the United States conducting official business. Here's what he said. Holy moly! It was fascinating to watch the flurry of activity at dinner when the news came that North Korea had launched a missile in the direction of Japan. The Prime Minister Abe of Japan huddles with his staff, and the president is on the phone with Washington, D.C. The two world leaders then conferred and then went into another room for a hastily arranged press conference. Wow, the center of the action. Does anybody see this as maybe a bit untoward, maybe not exactly the way you should be conducting international affairs?
Tacky.
And tacky. And
no, really?
Mm-hmm.
Trump, tacky?
But fortunately, we didn't have the woman with the email server.
Oh, you know, gosh.
Because she did not handle herself appropriately.
Thank God. We didn't let her in. She's not, like, still here, is she?
No, she's in jail. They locked her up, remember?
Oh, yeah. Phew. Good. Good.
Phones, especially phones with their flashes turned on for improved visibility, are portable television satellite trucks. Don't forget this. If compromised, they can be used to get a great deal of information about what's happening nearby unless precautions are taken. Do you think any of those people took precautions? I don't think so.
Oh, you mean they recompiled their phone's operating system and reflashed the firmware and verified all the components were from the manufacturers that they said they were from and on and on and on and on? No, yeah. they didn't do that?
No, they didn't. They didn't.
Oh, phooey. Maybe next time.
And that's not all. They took pictures of the football guy. You know, the football guy. You know about this guy, right? It's a guy who carries the nuclear codes. But they took pictures of him posing with golfers at the estate. You know? You never even saw what this guy looked like before. Unless you really knew what you were looking for, he wasn't a public figure. Now they're turning him into a public figure. You know, you wouldn't do this on a bad TV show. It wouldn't be believable. And then Trump and Abe gave a joint statement, and Trump opted not to read his prepared remarks. How do we know this? Because he allowed the prepared remarks he did not deliver to be photographed, too, by a guest. Yeah. So while all this was going on, of course, Trump could not resist dropping in on a nearby wedding reception because I guess they were paying him money to be there. So he entered the ornate room, took a photo with the bride and her bridesmaids, grabbed a microphone, said, "I saw them out on the lawn today." I said to the Prime Minister of Japan, I said, "Come on, Shinzo, let's go over and say hello. They've been a member of this club for a long time. They've paid me a fortune." This is our president now. It's insane. I mean, it's funny, but it's also crazy and it's dangerous. And we could fill an hour just with the security issues that people like us who aren't obsessed with security issues are concerned about. You know, it's even I know you don't do that with the nuclear football guy. Even I know you don't discuss things like this in front of people who have not been cleared, who are not part of the government. You know, you don't allow people to just take photographs of things that you're carrying around that have notes on them. Really bad, really stupid. And exactly what you would expect from somebody who is not prepared for this office. Oh, but it goes on. It goes on. Yesterday we had the resignation of Michael Flynn. And that is turning into a real carnival because, you know, this is the National Security Advisor. The National Security Advisor, folks.
Wait, is that for the country, National Security, or is that a company, National Security? They make fences and stuff?
You know, it might as well be at this point.
Yeah, yeah. National Security Incorporated.
Why not? Why not? We've mangled everything else. But this guy, you know, he's supposed to know a thing or two. But apparently one thing he did not know was that it's illegal to be a diplomat when you're not part of the government. And he was not part of the government in December when he talked to the Russians, the Russian diplomats, and apparently talked to them about the sanctions that President Obama had imposed against them. Now, we don't have the exact text of what was said, but the phone call was recorded. They didn't know that. They did not know that. Michael Flynn was very clear. He said, nope, did not discuss the sanctions at all. And Vice President Pence said the same thing because that's what Michael Flynn told him. And that was the party line until it became clear that guess what, folks? That phone call was recorded. And we've got the transcript. And you're lying. You're lying. Because that's exactly what you discussed. At that point, Michael Flynn said, you know what? I don't remember what I discussed. And Vice President Pence said, well, you know, Michael told me what he told me, and I believed him, so I don't, I'm clear. And President Trump said, I have no idea what's going on. You can't blame me. So now the outrage from the Republicans is the fact that the phone call was recorded. Not the fact that there's a lie, not the fact that there's all kinds of security breaches and violations of protocol and breaking of laws. No, we're going to put all that aside. Who leaked this? How dare they leak a private conversation? Oh, my God. There's enemies within our administration. Well, this is how it works. You know, when you talk to the Russians, our intelligence agencies are recording the Russians. Did you not know that? They do that all the time. They weren't recording Flynn. They were recording the Russians. And that's how they got the transcript. That's how it works. Even I know that. So, you know,
it's called counterintelligence.
It's super counterintelligence in the Trump administration, I'll tell you that. But Michael Flynn apparently realized this is too much, can't possibly get over this, and he's out. He's out the first one. I didn't think it would happen this fast. 3 weeks, and the first one is gone already.
Bye-bye.
Don't let the door hit you on the way out.
Bye-bye.
And, you know, do you think Michael Flynn just picked up the phone and said, hey, you know what? I'm going to call the Russians and talk to them about this. Or do you think maybe somebody said, hey, Michael, why don't you call the Russians and talk to them about that? You know, and if that was the case, that person would have to be one of his superiors. And I don't know. Donald Trump is definitely his superior. Sounds like the kind of thing he would suggest somebody does. And it's quite possible in those transcripts, there's evidence to implicate Donald Trump. Yeah, we're looking at a regime-ending crisis here, if it gets to that point, where if Donald Trump is implicated, he's out. He's gone because he's clearly breaking the law by doing that and lying about it later. So these transcripts are very important. I definitely would like to hear them myself. I don't know if I ever will, but somebody's sitting on a lot of information that could be very, very important.
It's so amazing how, like, seriously, and I put that in huge quotation marks, that they take this job, like, only insofar as they get to do all the cool things and have all the power and do all this stuff that we're going to do because we know better than anybody. But they don't take on the responsibilities of doing things the right way within the construction of the office. That's when you get this sloppiness.
Mm-hmm.
I heard it characterized as growing pains and the initial sort of working out the kinks, you know, in organizing your administration and so on. But it's foolishness. It's abject foolishness that they would orchestrate something so obviously and terribly just obnoxiously adorable that they thought and were so confident that their phone calls weren't being recorded. Oh, there's no way. I have power. I'm wealthy and influential. I'm a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
We're winning. You know, we're in control.
We're in control now. That's exactly it. We're above the law.
They don't even think internal affairs, Office of Internal Affairs, and these mechanisms to check the health of those procedures and methods apply to them.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, if we mess that up, that's okay. We get a do-over. No, you don't.
No.
You don't.
No.
Because these processes, these systems, these protocols are in place to protect not your job, not your rear, not the party line or your agenda. They're in place to protect the American people, us, those ones, the ones that you run out in front of every sad excuse for a policy or action, the immediate go-to scapegoat for anything you need to rationalize is the American people this, the American people that. Well, guess what? Not all of them. And you keep acting like this, you keep screwing up the actual serious day-to-day functions of the office, the stuff, the little details that matter, you're going to be undone. Because those little loose ends, they will be your undoing. So anyway.
Just over 3 weeks, Kyle. Just over 3 weeks. And look at how we're talking. Look at all the things that... okay, we haven't even talked about Kellyanne Conway. You remember what she did this week?
Oh, that doofus.
Yeah, unbelievable. You haven't seen her very much on TV lately, but that's because she actually attempted to... we have to give a little background to this. Ivanka Trump, you remember, her fashion line got discontinued at Nordstrom's. And Donald Trump, in the middle of a national security briefing, or an intelligence briefing, I forget what kind of briefing it was exactly, but an important briefing, the kind of thing that a president would pay attention to, in the middle of that, he tweets that Nordstrom is attacking Ivanka by cutting her fashion line at their stores, and somehow that's an attack on the government, on the administration, by doing that. Exactly the kind of thing that we were told would not be an issue. But if somebody makes a business decision, which Nordstrom is entitled to do, and based on the plummeting sales of Ivanka Trump's products, was a perfectly rational thing. But doing that incurs the wrath of the president. So obviously there's a very close link, exactly the kind of thing that's not supposed to happen. And here it is happening in the middle of an important meeting. This is what he's concerned about. I mean, it's just, I'm blown away. So in the wake of that, after this becomes a story, Kellyanne Conway is there on some morning TV show on Fox, I believe. And she just blatantly says, yeah, you know what? I'm going to give a free commercial to Ivanka Trump, buy her stuff. It's really amazing. Apparently thinking that she does not have to answer for that kind of thing is not illegal, that there aren't going to be ramifications. And Sean Spicer, I think later in the day, said that she's been counseled. I just love these words they use. We have no idea what actually happened. But, yeah, she's been counseled about this. I mean, these are things that, you know, if you threw the staff of WUSB into the White House and said, you know, you guys run things for 3 weeks, we would do better. We would know the rules a little bit better just by instinct than these buffoons that are currently running things.
Yeah. I the mismanagement abound. It's amazing. She says this. Kellyanne Conway said this illegally because she's a public official. Mm-hmm. But on top of that was like, so I guess what is the word?
Words are failing us. I know.
It's delusional. So abjectly, I've said abject twice tonight.
You can say it.
Flipping delusional. She thinks that we are somehow sympathetic to Ivanka's fashion line. I'm sorry. And okay, this is all to completely ignore how we're supposed to also completely accept that Ivanka is a serious businesswoman because she has a fashion line. Woohoo! A fashion line makes her qualified to be a successful businesswoman.
I thought she was on staff at the White House now. How can she be a businesswoman and that at the same time? We were told that it wasn't going to be a conflict.
So, bravo! Thanks for taking those big strides, Ivanka, in the business world, and the amazing things you've done for fashion, the incredible God knows what that you've done for style. You're so influential. But on top of that, we're sympathetic because your stuff doesn't sell. But Nordstrom decided they didn't.
You've got to turn off the sarcasm at some point because I don't know when it ends.
It doesn't.
No, sir. We've been sarcastic for most of the hours so far. So we have to be ourselves. That's what people pay for.
Anyway, like there are no other things for women to do in business. Like, how cliched and stupid is that? And then to have daddy come in and save the day from on high or low, whatever you consider his office position to be.
Of course, he didn't save any day.
No, because Nordstrom's stock went up. They stood by the product line being canceled, and two other stores dropped them as well.
And I'm going to find out where Nordstrom's is now. I'm going to go there. I'm going to buy something.
Nordstrom's is a good company.
And I can say that because, you know, I'm not saying buy something at Nordstrom, but I can say what I'm going to do.
Hold on. Let me just do a commercial for them
really quickly. No, we can't do that.
No, I'm just going to do a commercial
real quick. No, we can't. We know the rules, and we're not a commercial station. We can't do commercials.
Everybody go out and support WUSB Stony Brook.
You know what I will do, though? I will go to Nordstrom's. I give a firm handshake to the cashier and say, good job. You know, stand by your convictions. And hopefully we'll get some convictions out of this, too.
So Nordstrom's is a Seattle company, I will say.
Are they really?
That's the only thing I'm going to say.
Started
out as a shoe company, and it is a tried and true Nordstrom retailer empire. That whole thing that comes from Seattle. So
okay,
watch out.
Yeah, you know, have we left out anybody so far? Okay, so Flynn and Conway.
Warren thing.
And Trump and...
McConnell shutting down Warren.
Warren. Sean Spicer. Sean Spicer on SNL, of course.
Yeah, he was on SNL again.
Again, yeah. And, you know, apparently Trump's got a thing about females portraying males in his administration. So that's one of the reasons why they are just going, you know, full on with females impersonating members of his administration. You saw Melissa McCarthy again portraying Sean Spicer, but then you saw more people.
Kate McKinnon as Jeff Sessions.
That's right. The newly confirmed attorney general. And boy, that's going to be a carnival ride right there. Just oh my God.
An out gay female played Jeff Sessions.
Isn't that amazing? The other Trump portrayal of what's her name on SNL. Wanted to play Donald Trump.
Hillary. Oh, Rosie.
No, that wasn't it. That was actually on the show.
I'm blanking.
Okay.
Baldwin, give me something. Wait. What are we?
She wanted to portray Trump. I feel like an idiot because I don't remember all the people's names on SNL. This is the one who got hacked.
Oh, got it.
Thank
Leslie
you.
Leslie Jones.
Yes. God. Leslie Jones, of course. And she was portraying Trump, and
the one who gets typecast as the screaming as a person who's always screaming.
Yes.
So
whenever possible, they are now having females portray members of the Trump administration who are not already female, and you gotta realize that's driving them berserk, and they can't say anything about it. You know,
there's no way to really touch that without coming off as jerks.
Yeah. Okay, but you know that's just the tip of the iceberg. We found this. Actually, a bunch of people found this. Apparently, the Library of Congress has been selling a Donald Trump inauguration print, and it has the following quote: "No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for the future." Is beyond our reach. And that's the quote under a smiling picture of Donald Trump. Problem is that the word "too" is misspelled. No challenge is too great. T-O, 1-0 instead of two. Yeah, Donald Trump inauguration print. Now, you know, I have to wonder. This is from the Library of Congress. I actually checked this out. Library of Congress, their Shopify store. It's real. It's not Photoshopped. It was right there. I got to wonder, might that be somebody at the Library of Congress or somebody in charge of their store that just kind of threw that in there? Now, yeah, you could say maybe it's just a typo, maybe the person's illiterate, but, you know, to get that far, for nobody to proof it, for it to go out like that, and for it to be in the phrase, no challenge is too great, and to get that wrong, come on, that's got to be intentional. Somebody in there sabotage that. And I just want to know, did anybody buy those inauguration prints and get that particular quote spelled that way? Because, wow, that is a collector's item if you can get that.
look, Trump voters wouldn't know.
That's not entirely fair. There are some intelligent Trump voters out there.
That was the test. They wanted to see how many people returned it, said, no, I'm sorry, I cannot accept this. The quotation is not spelled correctly.
Don't do that. If you get a copy and it's misspelled and you want to return it, give it to us instead. We'll take it. We'll pay you for it. We'll pay you double whatever you paid. How about that? Please. OTW@2600.com. That's our email address. Just let us know.
Yeah, and we'll make arrangements if you'd like to send it to us. So.
But, you know, it just keeps going. It just keeps going, Kyle. The Republican National Committee wanted to get in on the act. Abraham Lincoln's birthday was February 12th, 2 days ago.
So-called Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, yeah. You know, we haven't even touched upon the courts, the judges.
The so-called judges. The so-called also from
judges.
Seattle.
Oh, my God. Well, okay. We'll get to that. We'll get to that. Wow.
Take your time.
We only have 20 minutes left, you know. Come on, Trump administration. You got to slow down a little bit. We don't have enough time. All right. So February 12th was Abraham Lincoln's birthday. And the Republican National Committee put out this famous Lincoln quote. And in the end, it's not the years in your life that count. It's the life in your years. Now, does that sound like something Abraham Lincoln would have said? It sounds like a Hallmark greeting card. And in the end, it's not the years in your life that count. It's the life in your years. There's no documentation of Lincoln ever uttering those words. That's according to James Cornelius. He's the curator of the Lincoln Collection at the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum. I think he knows what he's talking about. They tweeted this out, and that tweet was taken down on Monday morning. You know, I think it should be impossible to delete a tweet. If you tweet something, I think it's there for the ages. If you're an idiot, you know, it should be demonstrated that, yes, on this day, this person or this committee proved themselves to be idiots. So they took down their tweet, just like the commemorative print was taken down as well. But blowback was swift on social media and in news reports. Even historians were wringing their hands. People search for relevance, but they look to the wrong sources. And Harold Holzer, a Lincoln scholar and author, he actually did say that. Fake Lincoln is just as bad as fake news because this is American scripture, so it's worth examining and worth applying. What is with people? Why are they doing things like this, saying things that aren't true, saying things that are easily provable as false? Do they think they're not going to get caught?
Well, it's that I think meme culture has just grown, and like we photoshopped everything, and we've reserved the right to confuse, I think, just a little too much. I don't know. It's just all of this stuff sort of blends in, and social media bridges that a bit, that like artistic, creative, wacky element with the journalistic and actual information people are trying to distribute and discuss. This glue of these platforms tends to mix and merge everything, and then you combine that with stupid humans and you can get anything.
Yeah, true. Very true. Obviously, that wasn't true. That didn't happen. Fake news, alternative facts,
fake sentimental historical post.
Okay, so then we have the courts.
Ah,
let's talk
yes.
about the courts now. The Muslim ban, and here's the other thing: the Muslim ban. It's amazing how Republicans.
Is it a ban?
They just line up. They line up and say, no, it's not a ban.
Oh no!
There is a recording, folks, of Donald Trump. Was it last year or the year before that when he was a candidate saying that he is going to implement a ban on Muslims entering the country?
A Muslim ban.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't at that point. There were no conditions. Just basically he was going to stop Muslims from entering the country. It was Muslims. It wasn't people from a certain country. It wasn't only people who are on a list. Muslims. He used the word Muslims.
radical Islamic terrorism.
Now, I don't have the words. I don't have the quote in front of me, but he might have, you know, he might not have said ban right after the word Muslim, but he said he was going to stop Muslims from entering the country. Same thing. Okay. It's crazy semantics if you want to argue that point. So then fast forward to when he is actually president, and you have Rudolph Giuliani coming forward saying that Trump came to him and said, how do I do this legally? How do I have a ban on Muslims legally? All right. Again, this actually was said. There are records of these things. And so, you know, just because Trump and Spicer say, yeah, you know, the media is calling it a ban, but it's not a ban, even though we said it was a ban. It's just it's hilarious to watch Republicans saying it's not a ban. It's not a ban. No. We'll let the Christians in from these countries, but not the Muslims. And it's only these countries, and it's not other countries that have Muslims. So you can't say it's a Muslim ban, even though these are the exact words we used ourselves.
Yeah, it's a de facto ban. It's not said. It's not described or characterized that way. It's the minute, the second it gets anywhere near the courts, and that's the way they want to keep it. They want to keep the discussion about Obama. Again, they jump at his throat at the very moment holes start appearing and the seawater comes into their weak little boat of an argument. They completely jump ship on their idea and go for the throat.
No,
blame
true.
Obama.
They always point to him.
Deflect. These seven countries were already on a list. Obama this, Obama that. And then, you know, you get some comment, some idiot, because they're not coordinated and don't know what they're doing, outside of it, answers a bunch of questions and all but says it's a ban. You know, at the very moment that they're up against actual scrutiny, real judges, and all of a sudden you get all this walking back and denial about what it is. And it is a de facto ban. De facto and de jure, they're very simple concepts. The law can be one thing, and in practice, the facts are how it is implemented, are what you see on the ground. And essentially, they're putting something on the books for specific countries, and they're trying to embroil it in this obscure or seldom used policy that the president, at his discretion, can judge such and such as a national threat to a national everything, national, big scared, fear. You know, and that is now rationalization for something that is very, very well rooted in a religious policy, but it is not said to be religious. And in the minute you get anywhere near a courtroom or anyone who understands the law, they'll walk back language around religion and go for Obama.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, they go for Obama. They say that this is the same thing. It's not the same thing at all that he did. He did not ever implement this kind of a travel ban. And it is a travel ban because people are being stranded all throughout the world. And the kids are being separated from their parents and all kinds of horrible things we did not see to this extent under the Obama administration. I mean, that you just can't make these false equivalencies. They didn't happen. But what did happen was that the courts heard this. You had the judge in Seattle that put a hold on all this and was immediately criticized by President Trump as a so-called judge. You know, this temper tantrum that he throws every time he doesn't get what he wants is just so unseemly and so embarrassing. And to actually tear down a judge, we all know not to tear down a judge, for God's sake. Judges are the king of their courtroom, and we're supposed to respect them. You know, that's why they're judges. It doesn't mean that they can do whatever they want, but it does mean that there's some decorum there, and it just goes out the window whenever it goes against what Trump wants. So then, after that, we had the appeals court here. Three separate judges, who ruled unanimously against Trump. And he called that disgraceful and horrible and all kinds of other words that you don't usually hear from a president when it comes to a legal decision. And then, of course, his famous tweet, "We will see you in court," to people who are already in court. And, you know, I have not seen any motion towards actually bringing this closer to the Supreme Court. I think they finally are realizing they're not going to win. Supposedly this week they're going to put forth some other version of the travel ban. Haven't seen that either. It's been quite embarrassing and for us, pretty inspiring. And, you know, I feel so bad for the people that have been affected by this. You know, the people who are just trying to get to a country where they can live life, you know, and be not be under threat constantly. And the hostility, this goes beyond Trump, the hostility and the fear that is being instilled in all of us. That is really what concerns me more than anything else. You look to the north of the border and you see how many refugees are being welcomed there and how they are being treated. To compare with the way we are being treated, we have more resources, we have more land, we have so much that we can offer, and not to mention the fact that in many cases we've caused the situations that these people are fleeing from. We have a responsibility, and we always have had a responsibility, and we've lived up to it until now, where we simply are saying we don't have any more room. How do we not have room? How do we not have resources? You know, we have been accepting refugees and immigrants for our entire existence. And there's no reason for that to stop because that is who we are. That is who we always have been. It's just it's incredible to me that people who have benefited from that through their grandparents or through their parents or themselves, how these people are saying, OK, you know what? Doors are closed now. No more people allowed in. And what is it that's changed exactly? You know, why was it okay for all your relatives to come over on a boat without permission, line up at Ellis Island, and get checked into the country because pretty much everybody got checked in at that point? That's okay. But now when people are fleeing some other issue, some other economic or political issue, no, we don't want them. You know, back then, back in the early 20th century, people didn't want Irish people. You know, people didn't want various ethnic groups or religious groups, but they did not prevail. And that is how America was built. And America is constantly changing. That's one of the good things about this country. It's always changing and evolving. And you go to any immigrant community in this country. Well, let's focus on New York because that's where we are. We always gravitate towards those communities because they're the most vibrant, the most interesting, the most diverse, and they got the best food, you know. Do we want to put an end to that and replace it with what exactly? The flag-waving, closed-minded bigots?
Well, and the fear, I think putting fear ahead of what positive things those people bring to our country is really foolish because we lose as a result, and we're not actually preparing or protecting ourselves any more than if we went about business as usual. They're not the same people. We think because one or the other country, countries in Europe who has a different process and is a lot closer in proximity to these trouble spots, these countries like these seven that don't have the same kinds of passports and ability to vet people coming, that coupled with countries that have different immigration or refugee policies, I'm thinking France, I'm thinking places that have real ghettos of immigrants and you know, other social problems, they're not the same. But that fear, they want this administration, this ideology wants us to buy into that fear. Mm-hmm. Because it begets their control.
Yes, totally. It's all about control. It's all about the power of fear. And
so by separating, by not allowing people in, by us not having those interesting communities, that short-term gain, which mm-hmm. it isn't, gets us security that I would argue doesn't exist any more than if we just kept going about business as usual. I mean, you can talk about what it takes to get into this country and the obvious facts there, but none of that matters. So
I can't, you know, I can't
I'm not
say
waste
this.
My breath.
I can't say this, and you can't say this either. None of us can say, "Oh, we guarantee that an evil person is not going to slip in with a bunch of refugees or immigrants." Yeah, you know, it's bad people exist everywhere. We can't guarantee that somebody who has lived here for their entire life is not going to do something horrible. Happens all the time. Where's the vetting there? Where's the vetting against the next mass shooter? Where's the vetting against the Quebec mosque shooter? You know, all kinds of people have hatred in their hearts. It's not about nationality. It's about what they are told, what they are passionate about, what they are encouraged to do. And right now we are encouraging hatred. We are encouraging fear. And that's where I think we should be focused on trying to root out the evil, because what I see, I see all these images of people fleeing Syria and other places where war is ravaging the land. And I sure don't see a threat. I see people who need our help, and I feel obligated. If there was a way I could let in a million of these people, I would do it in a second, you know, because they deserve a home. They deserve to live and to prosper. What amazes me, and I think you also feel this, Kyle, you look at the kids. The kids are always smiling. You know, in most cases, they seem to be running around playing like they're kids and not realizing the hell that they're going through. How are they so happy? How can they possibly put a smile on their face? And yet we're meeting them with a closed door instead of, you know, open arms and you know, a possibility to live a happy life. It really angers me to see that.
Oh, no. They haven't had the chance to be discriminated against and have a terrible life here. Then they won't have that smile on their face.
Well, but they've already been through war.
We just haven't given them that opportunity.
They've already been through war, living, you know, having their communities destroyed, having to flee their country. And yet they're still, you know, whenever you see them on the news, they always seem so happy. I know there's lots and lots of exceptions to that. Kids who go through real hell and are you know, in bad shape. But I just can't imagine how any kid can get through that and have a smile on their face. It blows me away. And I just wish that, you know, we had the same type of openness towards these people here. And I think that's what we have to focus on is to get back to that, because, you know, we're good people here. There are so many of us, you know, who believe in sharing, and we can't yield to those people who want to close everything up and keep it all for themselves and spread fear and hostility everywhere. We just can't let that happen.
I think it's really important that the Border Patrol is empowered to be that middle ground, to see people as humans, and they have the, I guess, mandate. I don't want to use that word, but the ability to make those calls and make those judgments and not just issue blanket statements because it is quicker bureaucratically or fits some nationalist agenda that is being sort of rammed into everyone's consciousness. That's not what CPB should be tasked with. They should be given the autonomy and the ability to do their jobs. And you gotta imagine, they were put in an awkward position. Now, I get they are an arm of the executive, and it's wholly on the executive branch to control and give them orders that make sense. But how disrespectful is that to be issuing these things that aren't legal and then embroil Border Patrol with all of this work? All of a sudden, hundreds of people need to be stopped and mm-hmm. contained and held, or not. Or, you know, it's this like bipolar mandate for discrimination that you're throwing in the average Border Patrol agent's lap, wherever they are, southern border, airports, all along the north, you know, regular everyday stuff becomes huge crises and disrupts their workflow, where they have to become extremely, you know, secure increase their scrutiny to a very high degree and then turn it off and then turn it on. It's just completely erratic and does not, I think, set them up for success.
Yeah. You know, it's an ongoing thing, and we're going to have to be monitoring the situation for the immediate future. But, you know, in our everyday lives, let's just try not to to buy into the fear and hostility we're being told that we have to, because so many times it's distorted, inaccurate, just outright false. And there are a lot of people out there who are scared right now in our backyards, not literally, but in our neighborhoods, that really should not live like this. When I think of the number of times we've been to other lands and always been met with open arms from people who would be pushed away by default here. Unfortunately, we can't discuss this anymore because we've pretty much used up the whole hour talking about all the things that have gone wrong or right this week in the new administration. One thing, though, that I did want to focus on quickly, because somebody called us on this. Do you remember, Kyle, we tried calling the White House last week and we were met with a brick wall. They said they didn't want to hear from us.
Yeah, there was a number, I think, and it didn't complete or otherwise connect us. I don't remember talking to anybody specifically.
If you call the White House phone number, which I think is 202-456-1111, that's their feedback line. They say the feedback line is closed and you have to contact us through Facebook, but they don't tell you how to do that. And nobody has told us how to do that either. We asked people, can you figure it out? And no one has yet. But then a few people emailed us saying, hey, big hypocrites, look what happens when you try to call you guys at your new phone number. I'm going to demonstrate this right now. If you call 631-632-6901, listen. Well, okay, it takes a while for the call to go through for some reason, but when it
does... We're sorry. The party you are calling does not wish to receive any calls. We're sorry. The party you are calling does not wish to receive any calls.
How do you like that recording? I didn't know such a recording existed. Actually, I just fixed it because there's a little button here that says Do Not Disturb. But Do Not Disturb is a feature on our new phone system that apparently was set on, and now it's set off, so people can reach us now at that phone number. I didn't know about that, but now I do.
Oh, so that was a feature... Not incompetence from Campus Telecom.
Well, not yet, anyway. But now it's weird because it's DND, Do Not Disturb. It says DND on, which you would think to mean that Do Not Disturb is on. But no, it's actually off, because if I hit the button, that means I'm setting the on switch. And now it says off, but that means that it's on. You get it?
Yeah, it's if you want it on, press the button.
Pretty much. Hey, you know, that's all the time we have. You can write to us, otw@2600.com. We'd love to hear from you. Please stay awake. Let us know what's going on. Take care. Good night.
I was a miner. I was a docker. I was a railwayman between the wars. I raised a family in time of austerity with sweat at the boundary between the wars. I paid the union, and as times got harder, I looked to the government to help the working man. But they brought prosperity down at the armory. We're arming for peace, me boys, between the wars. I kept the faith, and I kept voting. But for the helping hand, for theirs is a land with a wall around it, and mine is a faith in my fellow man. Theirs is a land of hope and glory. Mine is the green field and the factory floor. Theirs are the skies all dark with bombers, and mine is the peace we knew between the wars. Call up the craftsman, bring me the draftsman, build me a path from cradle to grave, and I'll give my consent to any government that does not deny a man a living wage. Go find the young men, never to fight again. Bring up the banners from the days gone by. Sweet moderation, hearts of this nation, desert us not, we are between the wars.